This is Curious Minnesota, a Star Tribune project that sends staff from the state's largest newsroom hunting for the answers to great questions we receive from you, our readers. We're here to answer everything you want to know about the state's people, places, and culture.
Welcome to Curious Minnesota. I'm your host, Eric Roper. Today's episode of Curious Minnesota is sponsored by Primrose Schools. St. Olaf and Carleton Colleges have left a big mark on the world. Their alumni have reached the highest levels of entertainment, the arts, politics, and the legal system. Reader Daryl Swanson wanted to know how these two prominent private colleges ended up in Northfield, a small city just south of the Twin Cities metro area. Here's Daryl.
As a graduate of St. Olaf College, it occurred to me that with Carleton and St. Olaf there, how did that all start in such a small town as Northfield? Why weren't they in St. Paul or Minneapolis at the time? But Northfield's a wonderful small town. I really enjoyed going to school there. And at the time, back in 1970, at the height of the Vietnam War, there weren't a lot of jobs around. But I would have loved to stay in Northfield, but that didn't happen. And so I went on to a good career and quite a few adventures. So that's my story, and that's why I asked the question.
Thanks to Daryl for that question. It turns out there's quite an interesting tale behind these two institutions. And today I'm chatting with Trey Muse, who wrote a story on this topic for Curious Minnesota. Well, Trey, thanks so much for joining us today. Just so people understand, so you're in Rochester and you cover southern Minnesota for the Star Tribune?
Yes, sir. I cover southeast Minnesota. We are in the process of hiring more southern Minnesota reporters, but right now my responsibilities lie in covering much of the southern part of the state.
And so you wrote this story about these colleges in Northfield, and you know, with the alumni, I mean, these aren't just any schools. I mean, we have like Supreme Court justices, governors, senators, Pulitzer Prize winners, Oscar winners. It kind of runs the gamut.
Oh, there are many people who have gone on from Carleton and St. Olaf and done great things. One of the things that I found interesting was Andrew Volstead, the U.S. representative who ended up kind of shepherding the Volstead Act, the bill that banned the sale of alcohol in the U.S. He actually attended St. Olaf for several years.
Wow. All right. So it all leads back to a lot of things lead back to these colleges. Let's start the chronology then. And so we have to go back all the way to 1851 to a treaty. So what is this treaty and what's the significance of this treaty in this whole context we're talking about?
There were Native Americans on this land for ages and ages before settlers came in. In 1851, the U.S. government signed a treaty with the Dakota people that saw the Dakota cede most of southern Minnesota up to the U.S. so that it could be resettled by people from all over. You're seeing people from New England. You're seeing people from down south. All race to Minnesota to snatch up the land that the Dakota people gave up.
And so one of these people is a man named John North. And you note in the story, he made a trip down from St. Anthony in the Twin Cities area in 1855. Who is John North? Because he ends up being a key character here.
So John North is a really interesting cat. He's originally from New York. In New York, he was a lawyer. He got his start practicing law with a lot of abolitionists and really getting involved in the anti-slavery movement. So he comes over to the Minnesota Territory in 1849, and he's starting to look at business opportunities. He takes a trip from St. Anthony in 1855 down towards the Cannon River Valley, really. He saw that there were settlers along the Cannon River. He saw that there was a town nearby, Faribault, but there weren't sawmills or, you know, places to use these natural resources. So he saw an opportunity to kickstart an industry, and he took it. He ended up buying 160 acres of land and settling the area. And so the town is actually called Northfield because of him. He gathered a lot of residents that were nearby, all these settlers, many of whom came from New England, many of whom shared a lot of his beliefs, you know, being against slavery. One of the things that also united them was the fact that they were all Congregationalists, which is sort of an offshoot of Puritanism, right? These Congregationalists, they also believed that alcohol was an evil, was a moral evil. And so one of the bigger reasons for the town's founding was these people wanted a place where they would be able to ban alcohol on their own.
So it's sort of a dry town.
It was a dry town. You could have gone to Faribault or some other nearby places that had liquor stores or had bars, but they decided they wanted to keep that out of Northfield.
Okay. When do they plat Northfield then?
So this trip was in 1855, right? They plat Northfield basically within a year.
Okay. And so you write in the story that North wanted a college there, but he couldn't really get any traction until who came and sort of got the traction going for this college?
Well, see, this is sort of a bigger issue because this really gets into how a lot of colleges and universities were first started. I spoke with Tom Williamson over at St. Olaf, and he was telling me about the fact that many schools had religious origins because churches and religious organizations of the day were the ones who had the money and the resources to get this started. Most of these schools don't necessarily start up as colleges because it takes a while to get people educated to the point where they want to attend, you know, higher education institutions. So you Right. need the students. You also need the faculty who can teach those classes. You need the money to keep everything going, and you need the resources, the library books, things of that nature. And it takes quite a while to gather these things together. So it wasn't actually until a group of Congregationalist churches came together in the early 1860s that they started looking at Northfield as the site of a future college.
And they were looking at other towns too, but Northfield was sort of a pretty prime spot on the map at that point.
They were looking at various places around the state to start a college. They looked at a few southern Minnesota towns, including Zumbrota, including Manorville, before they decided on Northfield, in part because Northfield had the second largest population of Congregationalists in Minnesota, behind Minneapolis.
The other thing you note in the story is that Northfield was connected to the railroad in 1865. That means it's a growing spot. It's going to be on the map for a while.
Yes, there were plans to run railroad tracks through it from St. Paul. And while that didn't really start until 1865, the school was well on its way to being founded at that point. This Assembly of Congregationalist Churches decided on Northfield in 1864. It took 2 years for the school to start up.
Okay. We're going to get to that founding of Carleton College right after this message.
At Primrose, our balanced learning approach means exploring academic skills and life skills, combining purposeful play with nurturing guidance from teachers, and setting children up for success in future classrooms. Learn more at primroseschools.com/twincities.
Okay, so where we left it was they were about to start this school. So this sort of begins not as a college, you note, but as a preparatory program in 1867. What is it? And it's not called Carleton yet. So what's sort of the origins then of Carleton College?
So you're right. This is Northfield College at first. And the name, of course, is a little misleading because it is. It's a preparatory academy. It's not quite a college yet because, once again, you have to start gathering all of those resources. So the school is in existence for a few years. It actually starts offering college courses in 1870. But it was difficult to keep its finances in order during this time. You know, the school is just starting up. There's not too many students, and it costs money to run a school. It wasn't until 1871 when a Massachusetts brass manufacturer named William Carleton donates $50,000 to the school, which is just massive. This is a groundbreaking donation to a university or college at this time. So naturally, the college organizers said, hey, why don't we name the school after this guy then? Mm-hmm. Which is how Carleton College got its name.
Okay, we have Carleton College is now going. It's been renamed after this benefactor. Who is it that wants to start a new college? And what do they sort of encounter? I mean, you could imagine that this is competition. Maybe the first college doesn't, they're already having financial problems. They don't want another college in town, but that's not really what happens.
Well, Eric, blame the Norwegians. All those Norwegians, they wanted their own separate school at the time. The farmers in the area, the pastors, they decided, like many religious groups around the U.S., they want their own college to send their people to learn. So you'd think that this was an issue in town, but no, the Congregationalists supported the Norwegians' efforts. So they helped the Norwegians organize their own school. They opened up their own college in the 1870s. They founded it in 1874. This college is called St. Olaf, named for the 11th century Norwegian king who converted a lot of people to Christianity. And so this is starting up at the same time that you're seeing the first graduates actually come from Carleton College. The school is founded in 1874, St. Olaf. It starts up in 1875, and once again, it starts up as a preparatory school, an academy, because it has to build up the resources and start offering college courses within the next 10 years.
And so these schools are getting started at a very sort of auspicious time, or a very good time to be starting colleges, because there's about to be a big higher education boom?
Exactly. The Industrial Revolution has kind of hit the U.S. by this point. So you're seeing a lot of manufacturing, a lot of technological advances. At the same time, education is changing. From 1880 to 1920, the number of colleges and universities across the U.S. just skyrocket, because you're seeing more people interested in expanding their education and going into various careers. Enrollment alone among colleges and universities more than quadruples during this time. And you're seeing specific colleges open up for women, for Black residents. This is the start of the historic Black colleges and universities. You're seeing colleges start to move away from just general classes to more specialized fields. So you're seeing the beginnings of a lot of the modern college experience with majors and things of that nature. So you're getting specific fields of study, and you're getting all of these people who are starting to go to more schools, who are starting to embrace education. And at this time, you have Carleton and St. Olaf kind of launching their own programs just before this big boom. So they were able to take advantage of it.
Right. And so you note that these schools really started with these religious foundations. Did they keep that? I mean, how did that sort of play out over time?
So St. Olaf is still known for its ethnic heritage, for its religious heritage. It's still known as a Lutheran school, as a Norwegian school, but it keeps its religious identity throughout the decades, whereas Carleton kind of sheds a lot of its religious rules over the years. At the time, you know, one of the mandates of colleges and universities was, you know, mandatory church services. Well, you see Carleton kind of move away from that over the years. St. Olaf takes a little bit longer to do that. Carleton kind of moves away from being a dry campus. St. Olaf is still a dry campus.
Mm-hmm.
So in that manner, you see Carleton kind of shedding its image of being a religious school.
Right. And so these schools, I mean, you know, they really grew up together, and just like maybe siblings or something, you note that they also had a very intense rivalry, which is still a rivalry today. But you really, in this story, lay out how this was not always friendly. I mean, talk to us a little bit about that, because it seems like an interesting part of the story.
Well, that's the fascinating part, is these schools are very entwined since their founding. They share a lot of resources. They share classes at times. There's a lot of shared philosophies between the two institutions. But not when it came to sports. No, there are reports of downtown bloody brawls during home games between the two. There are reports of homecoming shenanigans. This goes on for several decades. You know, it was pretty prevalent in the 1930s and 40s. They actually, the two schools decided things were getting a little too out of hand by 1951. That year, they actually sign a peace treaty of sorts saying, we're going to tone things down.
Northfield, I mean, I was on the road this summer and just happened to stop into a college town and started thinking about how college towns are so unique. I mean, they really do, you know, especially in rural areas, you know, you can really kind of have a very thriving place because of colleges. And I think Northfield is a perfect example of that. But it's also very dominated by these colleges. And so is that sort of a double-edged sword for Northfield? I mean, like, how does Northfield today grapple with just the dominance of these institutions?
Well, there's no denying that Carleton and St. Olaf have helped shape Northfield into the community it is today. You know, the community is a little more than 20,000 people. It's seen as sort of a progressive bastion surrounded by a lot of conservative communities. You see, you know, both schools thriving and, you know, as a result, you know, some small businesses thriving. But the downside of this is there aren't a lot of major employers in town. There aren't many opportunities for Carleton and St. Olaf grads to stay in the community once they're done with their school. And you're seeing more people in the community kind of concerned about that and wanting to do something about it.
And there's also, you mentioned in the story, sort of a bit of a housing crunch because the schools are buying up a fair amount of land, and B, there's just sort of, there's seniors that are moving there. There's just like a kind of a pinch that's making housing more expensive.
Well, Northfield is kind of cursed by its success in that a lot of people want to move there, which is driving the price of housing up. And so Northfield, like much of the rest of the state, has a housing crunch. There aren't enough houses being built to satisfy the demand that's going on right now. And with a city that a lot of people really enjoy being at, it is driving that demand further and further up.
Well, Trey, thank you so much for laying this out for us. I mean, this has been a really interesting history that it surprised me. I don't know if it surprised you, but I didn't expect that there would be so much to this whole story because it is really a story of collaboration and of camaraderie in a sense with these two colleges.
It was fascinating to me to learn about the city's history and how it's affected things. There are a whole bunch of people who have come from Northfield who've had great effects nationally and internationally. And so it's interesting to see how one community can affect so much. And that's part of the cool thing about Curious Minnesota is we get to dig into the history and the context of why things are the way they are.
Okay, that's it for today's show. Just a reminder that you can now read all Curious Minnesota stories in one place at our new Curious Minnesota collection. Just visit startribune.com/curious. Thanks, as always, to Matt Gilmer for editing this podcast. Do you have feedback for us or a question you'd like us to answer? Send us a note at curious@startribune.com. And if you are enjoying this show, please tell a friend about it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Curious Minnesota. We want to hear from you. Ask questions and read more stories online at startribune.com/curious. Our show is recorded at the Star Tribune's headquarters in beautiful downtown Minneapolis, and our music is produced by Matt Gilmer. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes or leave a review. And until next time, stay curious.